Big. I got a mic, so hopefully that should work. Awesome. Andy, thank you very much for that that introduction. So welcome. For those of you who don't know, I am Ghanaian. If you Google the surname Legon, you'll find out it's a place in Ghana. So I'm Ghanaian. It's maybe filtered out over the years, but the heart is Ghanaian. But I've also been told I sound Australian. Okay? That might be a shock to you. I was actually born in England, for those of you who may be a surprise. I keep getting told recently that I sound Australian. Even the peak of it recently was Daniel Rowland came up to me. I'd done an assembly at Davenant School. And he came up to me after he said, oh, some of my friends were talking about your assembly. It was really positive. They were really great. And I said, oh, yeah, Jack, who did that assembly, that Australian guy. They thought I was Australian. And I'm thoroughly not Australian in any way. I have a good Australian friend. So maybe, I don't know, maybe we talk too much. So I'm going to stop talking to him as much. But anyway, please bring me up on my accent if you notice that. But it's you know, one of the worst days of the year is when the clocks go back. It's horrible. I hate it. Or is that today? Is it forward or back? Is it back today? Okay, this is one of the best days of the year. One of the worst days of the year are when the clocks go forward. I always get confused. That's the problem. That's why I don't like that kind of change anyway. But when the clocks go and you lose an hour, it's horrible, isn't it? Oh my goodness, and you get less hours sleep, or there's something, you have to miss something in a day. But today's a great day because we've gained an hour. The clocks have gone back, right? Hannah's telling me, great. The clocks have gone back. I don't know about most of you, I imagine most people spend their hour in sleeping, a bit of extra hours. Did anyone not spend their hour sleeping? Okay, what did you guys do? Rachel, what did you do with your hour? She read her Bible. That's awesome, isn't it? An extra hour of Bible reading. That's a spiritual woman. Anyone else got anything better than that? Yeah? Huh?
Match of the day.
Match of the day. Okay, that was the extra hour. Match of the day. Anyone else? That's a good one. Yeah? Say that again. Oh, isn't that nice? Laid in bed speaking to her husband. Extra fellowship with her marriage. That's fantastic. Yeah? Wow, look at that. Oh, that's an example of a godly husband. Fantastic. I spent mine sleeping, so now I feel bad. But anyway, it's a great day, and it's great to be here. It's great to be able to speak with you guys today. I'm going to be in Kings. We're going to be in 1 Kings 15, and I'm going to be speaking about the king of Judah, Asa, his name was. I'm going to learn some lessons from his life. So if you want to turn over to 1 Kings 15. Now, there's a lot more in 2 Chronicles about his life than there is 1 Kings. In 2 Chronicles 14 to 16, so if you do want to know more, definitely read up there for a deeper understanding. But the dating of these kings is normally relevant to their contemporary king in Israel. So Asa's reign, he was king in the 20th year of Jeroboam, who Andy spoke about on a Friday a short while ago. And he reigned, Asa reigned for 41 years. Some of that might have been a co-regency with his father Abijah, which was common. But he reigned for 41 years. So we're going to learn about him now in 1 Kings. Fantastic. So 1 Kings 15, I'm going to read from verse 9 to 24. In the 20th year of Jeroboam, king of Israel, Asa became king of Judah, and he reigned in Jerusalem for 41 years. His grandmother's name was Maacah, daughter of Abishalom. Asa did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, as his father David had done. He expelled the male shrine prostitutes from the land and got rid of all the idols his father had made. He even deposed his grandmother, Maacah, from her position as queen mother because she had made a repulsive Asherah pole. Asa cut the pole down and burned it in the Kidron Valley. Although he did not remove the high places, Asa's heart was fully committed to the Lord all of his life. He brought into the temple of the Lord the silver and gold and the articles that he and his father had dedicated. There was war between Asa and Baasha, king of Israel, throughout their reigns. Baasha, king of Israel, went up against Judah and fortified Ramah to prevent anyone from leaving or entering the territory of Asa, king of Judah. Asa then took all the silver and gold that was left in the treasuries of the Lord's temple and of his own palace. He entrusted it to his officials and sent them to Ben-Hadad, son of Tabrimon, the son of Hezion, the king of Aram, who was ruling in Damascus. "Let there be a treaty between me and you," he said, "as there was between my father and your father. See, I am sending you a gift of silver and gold. Now break your treaty with Baasha, king of Israel, so that he will withdraw from me." Ben-Hadad agreed with King Asa and sent the commanders of his forces against the towns of Israel. He conquered Ezion, Dan, Abel, Beth, Maacah, and all Kinnereth, in addition to Naphtali. When Baasha heard this, he stopped building Ramah and withdrew to Tirzah. Then King Asa issued an order to all Judah. No one was exempt, and they carried away from Ramah the stones and timber Baasha had been using there. With them, King Asa built up Geba and Benjamin, and also Mizpah. As for all the other events of Asa's reign, all his achievements, all he did, and the cities he built, are they not written in the books of the annals of the kings of Judah? In his old days, however, his feet became diseased. Then Asa rested with his fathers and was buried with them in the city of David, in his father David. And Jehoshaphat, his son, succeeded him as king. Fantastic. My first point, if it were, is Asa did what was right. I know it was great. Him, Mike preached last week, and he talked about how God's so positive when he speaks about us. And so many of the characters in the Old Testament, we see some negative attributes of their life, but God overall is very, very positive. Here he speaks very positively about Asa. He said, Asa did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, as his father David had done. You know, when we read that, okay, Asa did what was right, we might expect him to see him helping the poor, or defending the rights of the needy, or the justice for the poor. But we don't see that, and for us this might be a bit disconnected in 2014. Because what we see him doing is expelling shrine prostitutes, and smashing up poles, and the guy even sacks his grandma. I mean, what's going on? There's a lot of disconnect, we might not understand it immediately. The real issue, the heart of the issue here, was idolatry. You know, his father Abijah had not been a man like this, and hadn't followed all of God's ways, and he'd made lots of idols throughout the nation, and idolatry, serving other gods, was very prevalent during this time. So when we see that Asa was doing the right thing, it's great. He's expelling all of this idolatry. He's getting rid of it. And he gets rid of his grandma because she'd made this Asherah pole. She started worshipping other gods as well. So he removed her from her position. He removed other people from positions. And he got rid of this idolatry in the land, which is a great thing to do. You know, the two issues I want to talk about with idolatry. Let me see what I have. I always get lost with these. There we go. Sorry. Anyway, so the two issues of idolatry. The first one, I'll get to that, don't worry. The first one is that it pushes aside a real relationship with God. Okay, it exchanges a real relationship God with a fake one. Now, the reason I got that Simpsons doll off, because you can imagine it like this. Now, imagine with your parents, you say to your parents, hey, I'm not going to speak to you anymore. I shopped around on eBay, and I looked, and I found a great Marge and Homer Simpson doll. And I'm going to talk to them instead. I'm going to speak to the Simpsons because they're fine. In fact, they'll probably be better parents. You know, I won't have to talk to them as much as I talk to you, and I won't have a curfew, and I won't have to do certain chores. That'll be good. That'll be all right. That's what it's like for God with this idolatry, worshipping these empty idols, these empty statues that a man made. It was something that completely disconnected the people to God. It was something that divided them and got in between their relationship with God. It was a dangerous and damaging thing. Hey, if you did that to your parents, they would be hurt. They would be disheartened, they would be discouraged. Our parents look after us, they give birth to us, they raise us all our lives, they care for us, they provide for us, they put up with all of our mess and nonsense and nuisance for our entire lives. If you were just to suddenly exchange them for Marge and Homer, it's empty. They'd be discouraged and they'd be hurt. That's exactly how God feels. And you might not have golden calves in your house. You might not. But it might be different. This has gone off, hasn't it? Yeah, I'm just going to... Is this on? Yeah, we'll put this on instead.
Quite unreliable. Anyway, it might be different, right? The parents, they'd feel discouraged, and they would feel hurt by you doing that, absolutely. And it's a coldness, a horrible thing to do. Now, not all of us have had great parents, but God has always been there. He's always been a faithful and loving parent. He's always been consistent. He's always provided for us. I want to urge you, maybe you doubt that. Maybe you're not sure about that. If you do doubt that, if you're not sure who God is, I want to encourage you. Maybe you're visiting with us today. I want to encourage you to speak to the person who brought you here today. You know, talk about your doubts. Or maybe even you're a Christian and you're confused about who God is. I think read the Bible and see who God really is in the Scriptures. Often we can also bring our own baggage to God and we can think he's different than he really is. I know for me, I had warped ideas of who God really is, who God really was. And I still struggle with that now. Before, as a Christian, I thought it was, you know, I barely believed in any kind of deity. I thought maybe there was some kind of a force of nature or something like that. I didn't believe in a personal and loving God at all. And even when becoming a Christian and realizing, okay, this is true, God is loving, he is connected. Even then, I struggled to really believe it and really trust in God and really look to God for that support and strength. And that's something I have to constantly work on. But the Scriptures are a huge encouragement to me because they remind me constantly who God really, really is. The second reason that idolatry is so damaging is because it hurts us and it hurts those around us. You know, Worshipping false God damages us. We were made to worship the one true God. We were made to have a right relationship with God, to have a loving relationship with God. And when we don't have that, it damages us and it hurts those around us. We can have other gods in our life. We can have other things that we pursue above the one true God. For example, success. If you pursue success and everything gets wrapped up in what you're doing, in your achievements, we can lose confidence and security when that success is absent, when you fail, when you don't do so well. If your identity is in your approval from peers or friends or family or anyone else, if that's what your identity is wrapped up in, then when that approval isn't there, you get desperate and you just need it. Or if pleasure is what you pursue, then those times where you need to tighten your belt when other forms of pleasure are absent, they just become times of frustration and annoying. But when we have the one true God in the rightful place, when he's our only source, when he's the first priority in our lives, we can know how truly loved we are, how cherished we are by God. We can have that right relationship with him. You know, for us as Christians, sometimes our false gods, our idols are a bit more subtle. Like I said, we're not really, as a church, I don't think we get too much into worshipping golden calves and making poles, as far as I know. And maybe there's issues out there I'm not aware of. But that's not normally the idolatry we slip into. Sometimes it's a lot more subtle. I really appreciated what Tosin said. You know, in his communion, we can fall into different mindsets. And even as Christians, we can kind of go on doing the right thing, but we're not actually motivated by the cross. I know for me, sometimes my idol can subtly slip in there. I might be doing exactly the same stuff, but I'm not always doing it to please God. And I'm not always doing it to serve God and because I love God. Sometimes, like Tosin said, it becomes about me and it becomes my own ego. Sometimes I become my own idol and I want to serve myself. Or the peer approval does slip in for me, and I start doing things because other people are watching me, and I want other people to see me doing the right things, and I can subtly forget it's all about God, and it's God that really needs to be our focus. It's called I like to refer to this sometimes as the gospel of convenience. It's mentioned in Luke 18, the parable of the sower. It said, "The seed that fell among the thorns stands for those who hear, but as they go on their way, they are choked by life's worries, riches, and pleasures, and they do not mature." It's very easy for us to get subtly affected by the world around us and for it to tug at our heartstrings and start to pull on us. And it's easy for those thorns to grow up around us and start to choke us and start to drag us down. And then it can subtly shift our hearts away from God. And sometimes we can start setting up our own idea of God. And we don't look to the true God that's in the Bible, but we set up our own ideas of what God's like. And we start to think maybe he doesn't mind these areas of worldliness in my life. Maybe I can do these things. You know, God loves me after all. Maybe these things are okay. We start to set up an image of God in our minds that's not the true God. We start to worship a different God. Sometimes it's that, sometimes it's out of convenience. Other times maybe we're just bringing baggage to our relationships with God. I know many of us have been hurt. Many of us have had bad experiences in the past or various different things have happened. In fact, probably none of us have had the perfect experience for our entire lives. That doesn't exist. And we all have some sense of baggage, and we can attach that to God. We can attach our own fears, our own worries, our own concerns and other things to who God is. And we can forget who he really is. But when God is at the center, like I said, we can know we're loved, we're accepted and we're cherished. And even when it's success, when prayer approval, when pleasure, when all those things are absent, we still have God. He's always there for us. I know for me, one of my probably biggest idols in my life was my sport when I was growing up. Many of you know I started swimming when I was like 7, and I was just very, very fortunate to get into competitive sport at a very early age, did it through most of my teen years. And I was very lucky to be able to compete for my country for a good few of many of my teen years. And I absolutely loved it. And honestly, I didn't believe in God back then, but I see it's a huge blessing from God. He'd definitely given me abilities, he gave me opportunities, and I was so, so grateful. I'm so, so grateful now for those. But back then, I wasn't grateful to God. It was really all about me. You know, I worked very, very hard. I was definitely wholehearted. I was definitely committed. I trained incredibly hard. And I competed with all my heart and did everything I possibly could. And that's a great thing. It's good to be wholehearted. And it's good to give everything we've got. But the problem was I wrapped up my entire identity in my sport. Everything was about my success in my sport. That's what everything revolved around, my schedule, my sport, and how I was competing and how I was doing. And even my own sense of self-worth came out of my sport. That was my identity. I was a sportsman. I was a committed athlete. That's what I was all about. But then that would mean if I didn't come first, if I came second, that would be the worst thing in the world. I'd be depressed. I'd be like, oh no, it would crush me. It had such an effect on me. Because it was absolutely my idol. It was absolutely what my entire life revolved around, rather than revolving around God. I got a great piece of advice one time. A good brother said to me, he said, never turn a blessing into a curse. And that a gift was such a blessing from God. But I turned it into such a curse. And it's so funny how we can do that with the great things God blesses us with. He wants us to have good lives. And he does bless us with many different things. But often we take those blessings and we set them up as idols. And we forget the God that really gave them to us. We can do that with so many things in our lives. And you see that through the whole of the Israelites. And we look at them and think, oh man, they're crazy worshiping all these golden calves. But they became very, very good at it. And it's passed on to the whole of humanity. We are very, very good at setting up idols. And just because it's got a lot more subtle than it was back then doesn't mean it doesn't exist. I want to encourage you guys, there are objects in your life right now that you're worshipping. Maybe you don't even realize it. But I can guarantee you it's damaging you and it's damaging the people around you. If you can't see it, ask someone close to you. Ask someone who knows you well. Ask them, what idols are in my life? What things now get in between me and God, or even could have the potential to one day? Things that we don't want to let go. No, there's no-go areas that you don't want to let go of, that you don't want to surrender to God. Those things can so easily set themselves up as idols in your life. What do you need to deal with decisively in your life today? What do you need to run away from? What do you need to pursue? If you're a Christian, what areas of compromise are you entertaining in your life? And who do you need to talk to today to confess, repent, and begin to deal with these areas? We're talking about compromise. I want to talk about my second point is although. So here, one of the very, very subtle lines for Asa in verse 14, it says, although he did not remove the high places, Asa's heart was fully committed to the Lord all his life. That although seems like a very simple little word, but it's an incredibly loaded word. And it'd be very easy for us to gloss over that, right? Although he didn't remove the high places, his heart was fully committed to the Lord all the days of his life. You know, Mike said this yesterday about God always very, very positive. And we could sort of say, oh, no big deal. He was fully committed to the Lord all his life. He slipped up on this one tiny little area. No big deal. Small compromise, not a big issue. That's not at all what this verse is saying. It's not saying in any way that this is not an issue. It definitely was an issue. And this small compromise led to a big compromise later on. You know, high places, they were a place of worship that was unauthorized by God. Initially, maybe at times they would have been places where people still worshipped God, but often they still slipped into idolatry at some point. But often these places, they were places that the worship of false idols, and false gods were worshipped, and various different things were happening there. You know, the word was very, very clear about these places. Probably because of the danger of the disunity it would create, of the idolatry it would create, the word was clear that the only one true place of worship was the temple in Jerusalem. That was it. That was very, very clear. That wasn't a confusing command. That was the one true place of worship. And that didn't mean you couldn't pray and sing and do anything else, do other things elsewhere. But it meant that the one true place for corporate worship, for animal sacrifice, would have been the temple in Jerusalem. You know, to us, this may seem like no big deal, okay? And this isn't something we have necessarily in our culture. We don't have, we have the church, which is fantastic. But obviously, we take the church wherever we go, right? As long as we're together as a family. But it's different back here. This is a very different thing. And this, like I said, this small compromise led to big compromises later on. We see in verse 18, you know, Asa got himself out of a military threat by paying Ben-Hadad, the king of Aram, to protect him. You know, you get a lot more insight to this in Chronicles as well. But this is an incredibly fearful and untrusting thing to do. Not only did he go to a worldly pagan king to help him in this battle, he also used articles from the Lord's temple to pay this king. That's not okay. That's not a good thing to do. He gave into fear. And in one of his most needed times, he didn't trust God. He didn't go to God in prayer. And God had done so much more previously and helped him overcome so much bigger enemies. But in this time, he didn't go to God. He didn't pray. He didn't trust the Lord. He leant on human strength. lent on a pagan king. And he used the articles in the temple to pay this king. His heart was not fully devoted during this. In fact, even later on, we see this in Chronicles. I'll turn there quickly. Here we go. So in 2 Chronicles 16, turn if you can, but in 2 Chronicles 16, verse 7 to 10. At that time, Hanani the seer came to Asa, king of Judah, and said to him, because you relied on the king of Aram and not on the Lord your God, the army of the king of Aram has escaped from your hand. Will not the Cushites and Libyans, a mighty army with great numbers of chariots and horsemen? Yet when you relied on the Lord, he delivered them into your hand. For the eyes of the Lord range throughout the earth to strengthen those whose hearts are fully committed to him. You have done a foolish thing, and from now on you will be at war. Asa was angry with the seer because of this. He was so enraged that he put him in prison. At that time, Asa brutally oppressed some of the people. We just see a decline. Not only does he not trust God, but then the seer sends to him and gives him the word of God, and he silences that voice. He puts him in prison. He gets angry at him. We also see him brutally oppressing people. A few verses later on, we see with this illness that he had, he says he did not seek help from the Lord, but only from the physicians. And then he died. The 40 years of his life, he didn't die with his faith intact. He lost that faith, and he allowed that small compromise earlier on to lead to much bigger compromises afterwards. He started off so well. Believe that small thing get in and damage him. You know, I was thinking about compromise. It was great having Tosin up here today. It's great having him in the East. Obviously, we've moved in together into our new flat, which is exciting. We were doing a little bit of shopping this week. All right, we needed some supplies for the house. We need to get a few bits and pieces, a few cleaning equipment, you know, some nice little things just to make it look homely. It is a brother's flat, but we do want to make it welcomeable. We want to make it a good place. So we got some different supplies and, you know, we got hand soap and toilet paper. And I think about compromise because, you know, you go around, there's so much choice on the shelves, right? And we went to Asda, so you've got the Asda Smart Price stuff. And it ranges all the way up and it doubles and starts tripling in price. And you think, man, where do I start? My temptation is always to go for the smart price. Okay, I'm economic. I like to be stringent with my budget. So I think, let's go smart price. But there are some things you just don't compromise on. Okay? And it was great to have Tosi in there. So hand soap. You know, initially I might go for the Asda smart price, but I'd probably end up like burning holes in my hand. Wouldn't smell very nice. So we thought, okay, so we got Palmolive and it was milk and honey. Tosin picked it out. He said it reminds me of the promised land is what he said. So now I washed my hands, it's just smelling beautiful. We got this owl spray. Oh, it's brilliant. I was like, wow, this is great. Toilet paper. Again, I was partly tempted to compromise. But I was really thinking about it. I was thinking, man, that toilet paper is not something you want to compromise on, all right? You get Asda Smart Price and you're going to pay for that later on, okay? So we got the nice stuff, the velvet luxury, soft and smooth toilet paper. It was nice. And I didn't regret that decision. I've been grateful for that. But then we got to one thing. We got to bin bags. Now, bin bags, we thought, let's compromise, right? No big deal. We saw that the prices and that you could get like 50 for like a pound or pound 50. And you're laughing. You see where this is going. I didn't see where this is going, right? I see this 50 bin, and they see another like 25 or 30, and that's like 3 or 4 pounds. So we looked at each other and we're like, no brainer, right? We'll get the Asda Smart Price. So later on, I'm realizing why I shouldn't have compromised on Asda Smart Price. Tosin wasn't actually around. He doesn't know this. But when I was cleaning out, I was taking some of the bin bags out. And my goodness, that Asda Smart Price barely made it out of the actual bin itself. I was helping out. Everything just starts poking out of various different holes. And I'm there like, and I managed to just get it to the door, at which point it just spills out all over our floor, which we just spent hours cleaning the whole thing and mopping it and covering it. It was fantastic. And all this bin just spills out all over the place. I had to go get other double bins and pick them up and then put it in a bag. And I learned my lesson. Don't compromise. I should not have compromised on bin bags. I'm grateful that I didn't on toilet paper and soap. When it came to the bin bags, I should have just paid a little bit extra and not had to deal with that pain. What we see here with Asa is he compromised. This is a lot more serious than bin bags, that's for sure. He compromised on a thing that God was very, very serious about. He compromised on something that caused serious issues later on. What compromises are you making in your life? You might look at them now and think that they're not that big a deal. They're small things. You might compare yourself to those around you and say, well, they do it as well. Not that big an issue. What compromises are you making? Are you independent in the sense that you don't seek godly scriptural advice? You go your own way. You lean on your own strength and your own ideas about things. Do you have that sense of independence? Are there stones left unturned in your Christian life? Are there those no-go areas? Are there sensitive topics? And other people probably know this better than you do. You know, sometimes the people be like, oh, we don't talk about that thing because he gets kind of upset. Do you have those areas in your Christian life? Although, does although describe your life? Do you have all those in your life? Although he watches movies that aren't best for Christians, he comes to church meetings and prays regularly. Although she emphasizes academic success above spiritual growth to her children, she loves God and shares her faith. Although he often attends worldly parties, he shares his faith and brings friends to church. Although he does not pray and read his Bible regularly, he's never late for meetings and gives generously to the church. Do these things describe your life? We could go on. And I'm sure as I'm saying this, there are things cropping up in your mind and there are things tugging at your heart. Those little areas of your life that are all those. There's little things that you kind of know you should deal with, but you don't really want to. The thing is with Asa, which is kind of confusing, is he was really radical in so many different ways. Like, he was radical in his dealing with this idolatry. He cut up these Asherah poles, he removed the shrine prostitutes. The guy even sacked his own grandma. It was well within his power to get rid of these high places. That was not something beyond his control. But he did it. He left it there unchecked. For what reason? I don't know. We could think about it, but I don't know. But he left them unchecked, which is something we know he shouldn't have done. Nobody is perfect. Okay, we've all got areas in our life that we need to deal with, things that we need to grow in. But let's learn these lessons from Asa. When God says to flee some sin, or if he says to pursue something that's righteous and good, let's do it with all of our hearts. Let's have that wholehearted devotion and not do it with just a little bit of our hearts. It was definitely in Asa's hands to remove these high places, but he didn't. Whatever God asks us to do, or to get rid of, or to sacrifice, we can. And we need to leave no stone unturned and have no all those in our lives. Often we start off this Christian journey with zeal. Like medal-hungry sprinters out of the blocks, fueled by our passion for God, we abandon our hearts to Jesus, longing only for his glory. Our hearts beat with that wholehearted devotion, much like the king of Asa did. He started off so well. He started incredibly. He was radical. He got rid of his grandma. He got rid of the idol worship. He cut up this pole. He got rid of certain people. He put other people in place. He did great things. He tore down pagan altars. He fortified cities. He developed a shield-bearing army of 300,000 men. And more importantly, he commanded Judah to seek the Lord, the God of their fathers, and to obey his law and commandments well. He started off great. But he made compromises. He didn't remove these high places. And those early compromises led to much greater compromises later on. He ended up imprisoning the prophet that sent him God's word. He oppressed the people. He didn't fully rely on God through some of the worst times in his life. And ultimately, he didn't die with his faith intact, which should be the goal of every single one of us. Not to have a great little spurt. This is not a sprint, it's a marathon. We want to die with our faith intact. And to do that, we need to deal with those small issues in our life right now. We need to deal with the things that we could easily overlook. We need to make sure we're radical with those things. You know, in 2 Chronicles 15, verse 1, it says, "The Spirit of God came on Azariah, son of Obed. He went out to meet Asa and said to him, 'Listen to me, Asa, and all Judah and Benjamin. The Lord is with you when you are with him. If you seek him, he will be found by you. If you forsake him, he will forsake you.'" God is so good. If we take one step towards him, he takes 10 steps towards us. And if we sincerely put him as first in our lives, he's with us 100%. And if there's anyone you want on your team, 100% is God. Absolutely. You know, if you're visiting with us today, I want to encourage you to stick around. Enjoy the fellowship. Talk to the person that brought you. And I want to encourage you to study the Bible. See what this stuff really says and how it applies to your life, and see who God really is in the scriptures. If you're a member of the church, if you're a Christian, I want to encourage you. Let's learn these lessons from Asa's life. Let's be encouraged by his strong start. And let's be sober-minded about the need to persevere in doing good and in seeking God. And let's be inspired by God's available love, strength, and wisdom for those who seek him and rely on him. Thank you very much.
It's great to hear from both Tosin and Jack, and I really appreciate just the lesson. You know, it's interesting when he talks about wanting to make their flat homely, that the examples he used was hand soap, toilet paper, and bin bags. Well, there you go. But the lesson about just not compromising is very loud and clear. And it's really important for us to make sure that we do not compromise in our walk with God. Let's thank Jack again for just a great lesson today. Thanks. Just the one church in the capital, it's their anniversary. All right? Okay? Let's do it one more time. Okay, you ready? 3, 2, 1. Okay. Right. That was the second practice. This is the real thing now, okay? Let's get the volume and the energy just a little notch higher, okay? Countdown. You ready? 3, 2. Fantastic. When you see that appear on Disciples of the Day next month, you can look for yourself in the video. We're going to close out our service with one final song. Let me ask the song leaders just to come up to the front now, and we'll close out with our last song.
Let's all stand. As Jack said, if there's anyone you want on your side, it is God. And the great thing about our last song...